And good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Wednesday. It's April 8th, 33 degrees here now in Old Town Park City. No word from the weather forecaster, so I'll tell you what the National Weather Service has to say about it. Beautiful day, sunshine, looking for a high today of 59. A few clouds tonight, we drop down to a low of 34. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a high of 56, where we're expected to see some rain, perhaps mix it with some snow late overnight Thursday. Looking for mostly sunny skies now by Friday with a high of 53 and lingering through Saturday morning. We'll see some clouds increase Saturday with more showers expected Saturday night on into Sunday. Sunday's high dropping down to a high of just 38. So another cold front moving through. Stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour, busy morning. We'll be talking first with Summit County Health Director Rich Bulla, an update on the COVID-19 pandemic and how Summit County's dealing with it. Also, from U.S. Ski and Snowboard, I'll be talking with Laura Carlton about the goggles for doctors. Joining her will be Park City resident, Olympic gold medalist, and SHRED co-founder Ted Ligety. Then, Sydney Dykeman-Pitsley is president of leadership at Treasure Mountain Junior High School. She'll be telling us about PC Spirit. It's a program designed to bring our community together during this time of isolation. And then finally, author and historian Larry Warren talking about the first pandemic that swept through Park City more than 100 years ago. Stay tuned. And stay tuned. Coming up on the Mountain Life right after the local news hour, today's guests are Dr. Tracy Thomas, a prominent psychologist and emotional scientist based in California. She talks about the importance of the public having accurate and current information on the coronavirus and talks about a new issue, the psychological distress resulting from repeated media exposure to the pandemic. Then KPCW Cool Science radio host John Wells talks about a fund that he and several friends initiated to raise money for those most vulnerable in our community. Then long-distance dog musher Catherine Cleeth, who has written the book Epic Solitude, talks about finding solace and the solitude of traversing the Alaskan tundra. Right now, I believe, on the phone with us, Nikki from the Utah Avalanche Forecast Center. Is that you, Nikki?
This is me. Yep. Good morning.
Good morning.
So this morning, we've got some warm mountain temperatures. They range in the mid-20s to mid-30s under mostly cloudy skies. Winds are westerly and lightly blowing, only 5 to 10 miles per hour. Today will be sunny and warm. Temperatures should climb up to the mid-40s and low 40s, 50s. Winds will switch from westerly to easterly, but continue to be light. Yesterday, there was a couple cornice balls reported in the backcountry, as well as signs of wet, loose activities, such as rollerballs, thin wheels, and easily triggered wet, loose avalanches. The main issue for today is going to be that wet snow and that wind drifted snow. So today, the avalanche danger is going to rise to moderate on all elevations and aspects. As the day heats up, wet loose avalanches will become possible on all south, east, west facing slopes, as well as low and mid elevation north facing slopes. On upper elevation north facing slopes, dry snow is lingering, so the possibility of triggering a wind drifted slab up there is still possible. Avoid travel on or below cornices as they tend to break farther back than expected.
Okay, Nikki, thank you. KPCW News Time now, 8:10. KPCW News Time now, 8:10. Good morning. Well, on Tuesday, the Utah State Department of Health updated COVID testing access and highlighted a couple of log jams that they were experiencing as they manage a response to the virus. KPCW's Carolyn Murray has the latest.
Governor Gary Herbert participated in the daily health briefing, appearing at the podium with a face mask, which he subsequently removed in order to be heard more clearly.
I'm showing off my latest fashion statement with the COVID-19 prevention mask, and I think it's becoming the symbol of the times we're in today, and I expect that more and more of the people of Utah will be walking around with these masks on to help protect them from the spreading and catching of the coronavirus.
Herbert fielded a question about testing for COVID-19. He says they'd like to test everyone, but they haven't got the capacity to test more than 3,000 or 4,000 people a day.
We don't have the capability of testing everybody. We would like to test to make sure that there's no backlog of people waiting that have symptoms. So we have a screening process that we go through, and those that have symptoms can make arrangements then to come and get a test. We have the ability to do that with virtually no backlog. We're having much more, success giving the test. The challenge we face right now, to me, is a little bit on the laboratory side, where we have a little bit of pinch points. The laboratory can't keep up with the tests that are being given. So we're a little concerned about that.
The Department of Health reported Monday that local hospitals and test centers were concerned about a swab shortage, but state epidemiologist Dr. Angela Dunn says they're working diligently to get more supplies. In contrast to the governor's comments, she says they have not reached capacity on lab services.
Right now, our laboratories, in collaboration with ARUP, Intermountain, the Utah Public Health Laboratory, and our testutah.com partners have a capacity around 4,000 to 4,500 tests to run daily. We have not met that capacity yet. And so people who are symptomatic can seek out testing. And if their provider thinks that they are an appropriate person to be tested for COVID-19, we do have the capacity to test them.
That's Dr. Angela Dunn, state epidemiologist. KPCW News Time now, 8:13. 8:13 now, good morning. Well, as we've reported, the Summit County Board of Health Monday voted to align all of the orders that have been issued during these days of COVID-19, meaning that all of our bars and restaurants, movie theaters, and gyms will remain closed through April 30th. Additionally, it means that people are ordered to stay at home and no one goes out unless it's for some fresh air, food, or other essential needs, and no visiting recreation areas outside of Summit County or congregating on our driveways, even if it is 6 feet away from one another. On the phone with an update about how long he expects this to last, I have Summit County Health Director Rich Bulla. Good morning, Rich.
Good morning. How are you doing, Leslie?
I'm doing well. Thanks. We've got a lot to get through. It's been a while since we talked to you. So basically, it's status quo then through Thursday, April 30th. What has to happen for things to reopen Friday, May 1st?
Well, first of all, things are not just going to reopen on May 1st. We need to be clear about that. We're in a process right now where we're looking at a series of indicators and trying to get our hands around where we are as a community and as a state with respect to new cases versus recovered cases, what the trends are. And I will share in just a moment that the trends right now appear to be favorable, and that's really terrific news. But we know that if we ease things too quickly or in a random way, then we may end up finding ourselves, you know, back in a situation where we've got cases rising quickly again. And I want the community to understand that there's a lag time. And so, for example, if we were to severely loosen restrictions and, you know, doing that with the best of intent, it would be at least 2 weeks to 20 days before we would know if that was, you know, a mistake. And then we would have to implement changes again, and it would be another, you know, 21 days or whatever that number is until we could begin ratchet things back. And so the consequences of making mistakes in this are months long. And so we're going to be very, very careful. We do anticipate beginning to identify, in fact, we're doing the work now, beginning to identify different components of our business community that might be able to function safely and others that we think may not be able to. And so we do anticipate moving forward that there will be some changes to the restrictions currently in place, but we don't fully know what those are yet.
So realistically, do you expect these orders to be extended through through Memorial Day? Because that's kind of the date we're now hearing.
I do. Now, that said, that doesn't mean it's going to be the same orders or the same restrictions. We're really serious about trying to figure out ways for the business community and our communities in general to operate more safely. And again, the guidelines, everything is focused on, you know, social distancing, cleanliness, slowing the spread, smoothing the curve, all of those different issues. That doesn't change. And so if we're able to identify ways, and let me be actually more concise, if businesses are able to identify ways moving forward, so if one of the things we want to do is to engage different components of the business sector in a conversation about what is realistic for them to do. And we actually did that when we issued the second order, 2020-02, that focused on specific segments of our community. And those, some examples of those, well, physical therapy, perfect example. We basically lobbed this out to the physical therapy community and said, how do you function safely in your environment? What restrictions can you put in place? And they put forth recommendations, and then we reviewed those and compared them to what other communities had done. and came up with a recommendation. And so I think there are going to be opportunities, but again, we need to recognize that we're in this for longer than we think. They won't be lifted, these restrictions, on May 1st. They well may be modified, but I do anticipate the bulk of the restrictions still being in place.
So is there some calculation that's being used to decide if it's safe to relax the orders? I mean, is there some percentage of people who have had the virus that determines that we can kind of carry on?
Well, I mean, that's one scenario. And you bring up something really interesting. One of the reasons that we don't worry about measles in our community, for example, is that we have herd immunity, and we have herd immunity through vaccines. And herd immunity generally means that about 90% of the population has been exposed to it, either through a vaccine or through having the disease. We're a long, long, long ways from that. And so the answer to your question is, yeah, if we were to get to say 80 to 90% of our community having either been exposed to COVID-19, built the antibodies to it, and or have received a vaccine for it, then it's business as usual. But I think we've all heard that a vaccine is I think at best estimate, a year off and maybe longer. And we don't probably want 90% of our population getting this stuff. And so the vaccine is a really important component to when we go back to normal life. That doesn't mean that we won't be a whole lot closer to normal life before a vaccine than we are now. There's going to be indicators. And the answer is, yeah. We've got specific indicators. Those include some information around spread and the rate of spread. It includes the relative number of new cases versus recoveries. It includes the evidence of slowing spread. And then some threshold number, and we don't know what that is yet, where it isn't, you're not seeing a lot of new cases. I've heard it said that the target for the state would be somewhere around 10 new cases a day. Well, we've had days when we've had that many new cases in Summit County. So I think we're still a ways away from this, and I think that's what we need to put our heads around and work very creatively to find a way to do business and allow business to operate.
Yeah. And the Coffee with Council discussion about the Utah Department of Health having more data and new data to share. Can you tell us more about that? I mean, what was that in reference to?
Well, so first of all, I've already mentioned recovered cases. We've just been reporting total number of cases. And if you look at total number of cases, of course, that curve is going to just keep going up because you're not removing anything from that number. And that thing we would like to remove are the recovered cases. We're now beginning to get some information relative to recovered cases. And right now, and this is a really rough estimate, but right now we're estimating somewhere in the ballpark of 50 recovered cases. So once you begin to remove that from the curve, you can compare the number of recovered cases per day to the number of new cases per day. And when that flattens out, that's what we're talking about this pandemic leveling off. And then at some point, you have more people recovering on a daily basis than you have contracting the disease on a daily basis. That's what we're shooting for. So we're reporting right now a total of 265 cases total from the onset of this to today in Summit County. We believe we have somewhere in the ballpark of 50 recovered. And so those are some examples of what we're going to be tracking forward. We also have better data related to the percentage of positive tests from all of the tests that are being given. So in other words, positive versus negative. We were very high in Summit County, and this is a really encouraging number. The state's been running somewhere in the ballpark of about 5% of the total tests have been positive. We had days in Summit County where we hit close to 30%. The last 4 days, we have been at 7.5%. And so we're keeping a real close eye on that, and that is really optimistic news. If we plot our rate of increase curve against other communities across the country. We're still steep in Summit County or in Utah, but relative to communities around us and some other resort communities, we're looking pretty darn good. And then another, I think, really encouraging piece of information is that we have many days since we've had a single visitor case of corona. And so what that says is that we believe that people are not coming here. We keep hearing rumors that folks are coming here sick. We have had a few instances, but very, very few, and it's been a couple of weeks since we've seen those. So it's important to understand that the virus is here. It's spreading in our community, but it doesn't appear that other people are bringing it here at this point. And so that's really encouraging.
I was going to ask, one of my questions is, what do you have to say to that social media influencer in New York City with 500,000 followers who's bragging online about loading her 5 small children into an RV and heading west? I mean, a person who has family connections in Utah.
Yeah. Don't come here. One thing the public needs to understand, and we've done our best to get this out, is Summit County is not a safe place to be right now. We have high rates of the disease here. And so it's naive for people to think that they're going to flee to Summit County to ride this thing out in a safe haven. The data don't support that.
Yeah. In your opinion, should the governor order a stay-at-home directive statewide? I mean, Utah, of course, lights up on that national map as one of the very few states that the governor has not done that.
It is my opinion that he should. I think it's a mistake. And from my side, as a local health officer, looking at my colleagues around the state scrambling to try to find some uniformity in what we're doing across our state, across counties, and across health districts, in my opinion, it's not the best way to do business. You live in a county that is supportive of being progressive in addressing these issues. I've got colleagues in some other parts of the state that are not so fortunate. And it would make this approach or this effort a lot more uniform. Again, he has his reasons, I suppose, for not doing it. But I do think it's a mistake, and I think it would help our fight to contain this by doing so.
Some public shaming happening on social media of people gathering socially distant away from one another, but enjoying a community circle on a driveway or a cul-de-sac. Can you address that? I mean, are these gatherings of less than 10 people still against the order you issued?
Yeah, they are. And in fact, we're recommending that it's even more restricted than that. We're not wanting to see social gatherings outside of families and those kinds of things. And we are seeing some of that. I don't think it's as rampant. And I've been driving around and looking at trailheads, and I've got to say what I've observed has been pretty consistent with our order. When we've been out, when my wife and I have been out walking, we notice that people move over to the other side, or we do. So I absolutely think there's some examples of people contradicting what we're trying to do, but I do think those are the exception.
Have there been violations? I mean, and has anything happened as a result of any of these violations?
Well, I do know. I don't believe there's been any citations written, but there have been some instances where groups have been asked to break up, and they've done so. And again, our county attorney, Margaret Olson, had a conversation with the governor's office about our order. She basically said she was going to use discretion in applying the law, because, as you know, some of the orders that have been put out do not include a legal penalty. And Margaret is very sensitive and I think has great judgment. So I don't believe there's been citations issued, but absolutely there have been groups that have been told to disband. And they have done so.
What's the message change about wearing masks? My memory is that at the first big briefing in early March there at a Board of Health meeting, you were saying that if you're healthy, it doesn't help to wear a mask. Now we're seeing headlines saying that a nationwide order may go out telling people to wear masks in public. Should we all wear a mask? If so, when and where?
Well, so the last sentence there, should we all wear masks? It is factual that if everybody had a mask on, you're going to reduce the spread. And primarily that's going to be because wearing a mask actually can help an individual who is sick from spreading the disease. So it doesn't necessarily, a standard surgeon's mask doesn't necessarily protect anybody who is healthy from someone who's sick. But again, if everybody has one on, then you're going to have reduced droplets in the air and you're going to reduce it. We are looking, first of all, it's important to note that it doesn't have to be apparently a surgeon's mask. It can be a bandana around your mouth. It can be a hand-sewn mask. We don't have enough medical masks. So that's an important point. Before individuals start to go through the medical masks, they need to understand that we don't have enough. We're going to run out. And so those masks should still be reserved for clinical professionals and first responders. In the county, we had a conversation. We're going to begin countywide, wearing masks more consistently. It's a soft policy, but I think it can't hurt, I guess is the way to say it.
About a week ago, Dr. Angela Dunn said that Summit County has been assigned a CDC inspector because of the high rate of virus here. What's that inspector or inspectors doing?
So that individual is actually there, and we've been in very, very close contact. In fact, we were in a brainstorming session with her just a couple of days ago. She's been helping us with the case investigations, and in particular, investigations that are complicated. One of the things that I think the public might enjoy knowing is that we're to the point now, we in a very short time period took real aggressive action. And those actions were pretty sweeping, so it was kind of a broad brush approach to things. We're now to the point where we're honing in specifically on communications, on why are people, if we identify a case or multiple cases, what do those individuals have in common? Why are they perhaps resisting orders? And we're not seeing a lot of that. I want to be clear about it. But where is the gap? Is it in communications? Is it perhaps in language? Is it an actual resistance to an isolation order? What is going on? And that's good news. That basically says that we're to the point now where we've got this broad scale system that seems to be working quite well with respect to reducing the spread. Now we can hone in on specific needs, and that's what she's helping us with.
Okay.
And so we're putting together some strategies to address some areas that we think we have gaps. And those areas are further down on the isolation and quarantine component. And she's helping us hone in on that. And that's been really helpful.
And quickly, any idea how long it'll be that we here in Summit County could test for antibodies?
There'd be no use in doing it right now. And just to be clear, the antibody test, they just tell whether or not a person has built antibodies to it. We're not in that phase of this process yet. You mentioned before, how do we know when people, we have enough people that have been exposed that can go back to work? That might be when we begin to use antibody tests. A lot of people are talking about what Telluride's doing. Telluride's using antibody tests on everybody. That doesn't tell them anything. The PCR test that we use to determine whether or not an individual is actually contagious and has the disease is what we need to know now, because we're in the phase of reducing spread. An antibody test doesn't tell you who has the disease. It tells you who had the disease long enough ago to have built antibodies. So I think they're complementary, but we're not there yet.
All right. Hey, Rich Bella, I need to leave it there. Thanks so much for your time this morning.
You bet. Thanks, Leslie.
KPCW News Time now, 8:31. Well, U.S. Ski and Snowboard has been collecting goggles at its Quinns Junction headquarters to be used by doctors across the country. On the phone with me at details, I have Olympic gold medalist and co-founder Shred and Park City resident Ted Ligety, along with U.S. Ski and Snowboard communications manager Laura Colton. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Leslie.
So, hey, Ted, let's start with you. As the owner of a company that sells goggles, it sounds like you were ahead of the curve here and donated what? Just some former season Shred goggles to the effort?
Yeah.
several weeks ago, or I guess a couple weeks ago, one of my friends, a nurse in the Bay Area, said they were trying to get some goggles together that they're, you know, getting them ready for when there was a big burst in cases. And I gathered together anything that I had that was used and everything, and so sent those over and been trying to get, you know, other athletes on board as well. So, I don't know how many pairs they sent, probably 20 something pairs over, and then trying to get some other athletes as well. Within Shred, I mean, we're so small that we don't really have the ability to, like, give a lot of newer stock, but trying to do what we can on a smaller level. But, you know, with the amount of skiers that are out there in this country and how many of them have old stuff that just sits in their garage or whatnot, those can actually go to good use.
Sure. So kind of you're acting now as sort of a spokesperson for this program? How are you being employed to do that?
I wouldn't say I'm a spokesperson. I just just have been involved in the sense of giving goggles and within our company trying to, you know, get some of our athletes that have a lot of old goggles to get on board and send some out.
Well, and you probably have bucket full of them, I'm guessing, right, over the years? It's like, oh, I could use these maybe again, right? Hey, Laura, real quick, tell us about the program. I mean, where people can take their goggles. I mean, as we're a lot of people doing spring cleaning now to drop them off.
Yeah, so we're collecting to the front entrance of the Center of Excellence located at 1 Victory Lane out in Queens Junction. There's a big recycling receptacle that we're just having people drop them into. And all the instructions on how to sanitize and how to prepare the goggles can be found on the Goggles for Docs website, gogglesfordocs.com. And that information about our drop-off is also located on our website, uspnsnowboard.com. And we're collecting until the need tapers or is met, but it's changing, you know, every day, every hour as hospitals request more, new facilities come on. And so far we've sent 30 to California, 26 to Colorado, and yesterday, with the help of Deer Valley Resort, we sent 90 to California. So it's really taken off, and as a ski and snowboard community, you know, we have an opportunity to help in some small way with the PPE shortage with our extra ski goggles.
Yeah, so goggles have lots of different colored lenses. Are all of them work? I mean, will they all work?
Yes, so, you know, tinted lenses will be accepted. They are using them. The information on the website for Goggles for Docs says, you know, a tinted goggle is better than no eye protection with a COVID cost to the face. So any lens in good shape.
Okay. And once somebody has a pair, they can be reused again? Or is it just a one-time use?
So the different healthcare facilities, I believe, have different operating procedures, but you can sanitize equipment. So I would say it just depends on the facility and their use case.
Okay. And you also have, I guess, Park City Lodging is also accepting them? Are there other?
Yeah, so locally, Park City Lodging has a bin. There's a local resident in Snyderville that has collected almost 40 that I'm coordinating with. Woodward is also participating. So really just trying to get the word out that if you want to drop off to our bin or a local bin, all that information is on the website. You're also welcome to ship directly. The website makes it super easy for you to just fill out, like, if you have one or two pairs and you want to go ship them immediately, you're welcome to do that. So we're just trying to spread the word that there's a need we can really help with.
And then what are you asking people who do drop them off at your location to do?
We're just asking that they please practice appropriate social distancing. And if they could, please look on the website, gogglesfordocs.com, on how to package the goggles. It just requires some sanitation and a Ziploc bag. We also have wipes and bags at the receptacle if you are out. So that would be helpful before dropping them into that bin.
Okay. Hey, Ted, back to you with a shortened ski season. How have you been keeping busy? That your Twitter account would say that you're living under toddler rule.
Yeah, I mean, I've been spending a lot of time at home, getting out and going on some runs and stuff like that, and just trying to entertain a almost 3-year-old as a full-time job when they aren't able to get socialized with their peers. And so it's been fun, but it's a challenge, you know. It's a challenge to keep him entertained and stay sane and get out there and move a little bit and stay away from friends and stuff. It's not easy. So, just taking it step by step, you know?
Yeah. And of course, the big news is that you and your wife are expecting not one, but two babies.
Yeah, that's right. We're having twins this summer. So pretty wild to be living in this and going through that. She had a doctor's appointment the other day, and, normally I would be going to those as well. But under these kind of circumstances, just with one parent there is allowed there. So, we're going through that. It's exciting, but, funny under these circumstances for sure.
Yeah, well, congratulations on that. So when this summer? When are you thinking?
In July at some point.
Okay. We know, are they identical or fraternal? Or
They're not identical, yeah. They're fraternal. We don't know the sex or anything like that, though. That'll be a new surprise for us.
Okay. Well, you're going to have more than your hands full with three. I mean, how does that now affect your decision about competing next season? Are you just still taking it day by day, or have you?
I'm planning on competing next year. With the program I had this last year, doing just Giant Slalom, I was basically home for 10 days, over in Europe for 10 days, kind of that basic rhythm the whole year. So that was actually pretty doable. Of course, three kids is a new challenge for sure. So, we'll be getting help and stuff in that regard as well. But I think with the lighter load of racing and all that, I think it's a good program for going back and forth and, the right balance between skiing and spending time with my family.
Well, that sounds very exciting. The best of luck to you and Mia as you move forward. And again, congratulations. Hey, Laura, anything else that you wanted to add?
No, that was it. Just all the information is on our website, uskiandsnowboard.org, and we highly encourage anyone with extra pairs to drop them off.
Okay. Hey, thanks both for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie.
You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. News time now, 8:40. Well, in just a matter of weeks, the founders of PC Spirit have created a website and are engaging and bringing together the Park City community during a time in which we must be apart. On the phone to tell us a little bit more about PC Spirit, I have the president of leadership at Treasure Mountain Middle School, Sydney Dykem-Pitsley. Good morning, Sydney.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks. So first tell us, what is PC Spirit?
PC Spirit is basically a program that's designed to help bring our community together and keep kids busy while we're out of school and stuck at home. And we have different challenges and a contest and all sorts of stuff people can participate in order to, stay busy and have fun and be active and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah. So did it start after school was closed, or has this been something that's been running for a while now?
It started shortly after school closed because we wanted to make sure that, we were planning originally to do a spring formal for our school, but then we figured out that we can't really do that. So we decided, why not create some sort of program that our school can be involved in? And then I brought up the idea to my team about, involving the whole community. That way it can be more substantial than just our school.
Yeah, so you've got a pretty impressive website that was put up. Who did that for you?
I'll be totally honest. For the most part, I did it while my team was helping me with planning challenges, planning the contest, and all of that stuff. I was building the website so that it was organized. I was adding pictures. I was trying to make it as user-friendly as possible.
Well, good job, because like I say, it's very impressive. You just knew how to do that, huh?
Yeah, thank you.
So as you mentioned, there's like every day there's a new challenge, and we have seen some of those results in the community. It was your group responsible for creating those thank you signs that we saw at the Summit County Health Department and People's Health Center. What are some of the other challenges that you've offered to people?
some of the challenges, so our challenges aren't necessarily daily, but they're biweekly. So we have two different challenges that, you know, if you want to enter our contest, you have to enter by certain dates. But this week, what we're doing is we're doing art and engineering. So one of them is called Lego Legend, and another is Act It Up. Lego Legend is a challenge created with engineering and STEM in mind. That way we can open doors for those who might discover that engineering is the way they want to go with their future, or for people who just enjoy building. And we have different difficulty levels. So people, you know, maybe smaller, younger kids who don't really know what they're doing can use a lot more Legos to build their tower, or people who are, you know, experts at Lego building can use fewer Legos to build a tower.
Okay. So it is something that kids of all ages then can enjoy, huh?
Yeah. Yep. We have all of our challenges are on different level bases. That way, you know, we can incorporate people with different independency levels, different abilities, different creativity levels, stuff like that. Because there are some times where, you know, younger kids, maybe they want to do the smaller levels, but they realize it's too easy. They can do a harder one. Or older kids are, you know, they think it's too easy, so they do a harder one.
Sure. So tell me about the contest then. Is that different than the challenge, or the challenge kind of is part of the contest?
The contest is basically a part of the challenges. So basically what happens is people can take pictures of, you know, what they did and how they did it and all that. And then they can post it on our website or submit it on our entry form on our website. And at certain points in the week, on Monday and Thursday, we pick three of the people that we think are the best of the best and that we like the best. Then we, you know, promote them on social media, promote them on our website, and just, you know, have fun with them.
Yeah. And then you've got some prizes as well?
Yes, we do have some prizes. Unfortunately, because we're not really in a situation where we can get to our supplies at school, our prizes are mostly promotion on social media. We do have certificate of achievements that we send out, and we were going to be giving out Pura Vida bracelets, but unfortunately those are at the school and none of us can get there right now. So.
Right. Okay, well, tell us, people can find out more about the program. Where is the website located at?
So the website, you can go to split.to/ParkCitySpirit, or you can email parkcityspirit@gmail.com. And it'll give you all the information you need. It'll show you the website. Okay. It'll just, you know, show you everything you need.
Okay. Well, we will put that link then up on our website later today. So, again,
awesome.
Good job. Sydney, thanks. Thanks for your time this morning. Anything else you want to let us know?
I don't think so. Thank you for letting me be on this morning.
You're welcome. That's Sydney Dykeman-Pitsley again. She is the president of leadership at Treasure Mountain Middle School. KPCW News Time now, 8:46. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Last week, Utah Governor Gary Herbert issued an executive order freezing evictions until May 15th. The governor expects tenants to have a bit more money in their pockets by then due to unemployment benefits and funding from the Federal CARES Act. But as KPCW's Emily Means reports, some renters don't qualify for those benefits.
It's Chris Mora Rubio's freshman year in his nursing program at Westminster College. The 19-year-old moved to Park City with his family in 2009 and is outspoken about his status as an undocumented immigrant. He's organized a petition to lower or postpone the rent for Park City apartment complexes until folks can get back to work. Mora Rubio says it's important to him to speak for his community.
I've been very aware that my situation is different from others, and that there's a lot of people who are like me who aren't as outspoken as I am.
A recent report from the Center for Migration Studies shows 92,000 undocumented immigrants live in Utah as of 2018. Most people in the U.S. without documentation, about two-thirds, overstayed their visas, while the rest entered the country illegally. Undocumented workers do file taxes through an individual taxpayer identification number, or ITIN, not a Social Security number. Those who use an ITIN won't qualify for aid from the $2.2 trillion Federal CARES Act, which sends a one-time check of $1,200 per adult and $500 per child. Mara Rubio says that's not fair.
To me, we're an essential part of this community too. We, you know, like I said, contributed tax-wise, but also just ideas and diversity as well. I think we're an important part of this community. And to be ignored like this just doesn't seem just to me.
Additionally, undocumented workers don't qualify for unemployment benefits through the state, which also gets a boost from the federal stimulus package, an additional $600 in unemployment benefits per month. In 2016, the Pew Research Center reported undocumented workers are most represented in agriculture, construction, and leisure and hospitality industries. And the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics reported leisure and hospitality jobs fell by 459,000 in March, mostly in food services. But Mark Alvarez, an attorney who often works with immigrants, says whether they're employed or not, people without documentation won't see financial relief.
Some undocumented workers may be considered essential workers, but in fact, they're not working. Other undocumented workers who clearly are essential workers, perhaps picking food that we're going to be eating in the next few weeks, in the next few months, they're still working, but they're not covered by any of these COVID-19 relief packages.
Mo Hickey, executive director at Voices for Utah Children, says his organization is estimating around 450 families in Summit County where this could be an issue. Hickey says the COVID-19 pandemic has shown that many people don't have access to resources they really need right now, like an internet connection and even accurate information. But if rent continues to be a problem for some, Hickey says it could exacerbate the public health crisis.
Because families are getting let go from their jobs, I'm already hearing about people now moving out of one apartment into another apartment with another family. It's just increasing the risk, right? And in some cases, it's multi-generational. So you have an older person with an infant because of the two families.
Mora Rubio says he doesn't expect any action from the federal government, which has stalled on immigration reform in recent years. He appreciates the work by community nonprofits, such as the Christian Center of Park City, for supporting immigrant families through its food pantry and basic assistance fund. But he says his community is fearful of repercussions by landlords, and what Mora Rubio wants is a show of support from city leaders.
They don't even have to do anything. They don't have to donate. They don't have to do anything like that. They just have to stand behind the cause, and that's going to legitimize our points enough to like pressure the landlords to do something more.
Mora Rubio's petition on change.org calls for 1,000 signatures of support. After that, he plans to survey neighborhoods to get a better understanding of the need there. Herbert's executive order halting eviction ends May 15th, at which point tenants are required to pay both April and May rent to their landlords. Visit kpcw.org for more information about COVID-19 resources for undocumented immigrants. Emily Means, KPCW News.
8:51 now. Good morning. Well, this isn't the first time Park City has seen itself through a pandemic. It's been more than 100 years, but back during the winter of 1918 and 1919, residents had to deal with the Spanish flu pandemic. On the phone, I have writer and historian Larry Warren. He recently did a bit of research and wrote up the Way We Were column for the March 26th edition in the Park Record. Warren, Larry, thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
Yeah, so was this something that you were already familiar with or something that you really did have to do some research for?
Well, it's something I knew about in general terms, but there is a fabulous resource online, which is Utah Digital Newspapers. So what I did is go back to when the flu started, and you can read all the park records that have ever been published online. And I searched for the word flu and read a couple hundred articles that all described the flu in one way or another. What happened is Spanish flu had broken out earlier in the year in Kansas. It started, and then it slowly spread. It was 1918. They were still sending troops from the U.S. to Europe for World War I, so the flu spread over there as well. And I knew about the international epidemic. It was crazy. It infected one quarter of the world's population, which was 500 million at that time. And between 17 and the biggest guess is between 17 and at the upper end, 50 million people died of Spanish flu in 1918 and 1919. In Park City, it was a pretty serious thing, and it did lead to wearing of masks, quarantines and pretty much locking the city down like we're doing today.
Yeah. So can you talk a little bit more about that situation? I mean, schools closed, public gatherings banned.
Yeah. I mean, it pretty much parallels what's happening today. Amazing that they used the same procedures 102 years ago. The mayor ordered people to wear masks, six-layer gauze masks is what he said people ought to wear, and that they ought to boil their mask every day. The town was essentially closed down. There was more illness in Heber and in Salt Lake, and the mayor said no one can come into town from those places. Also, school was let out in November and December, so school was out nearly two full months. Schools reopened December 30th when the number of cases went down. They figure about 70 people in Park City got Spanish flu, and a quarter of them died, so that's between 15 and 20 people who died. In those days, mining was going full tilt, and there were a lot of people with compromised lungs. The miners who breathed in rock dust every day had miners' consumption, which made it difficult to breathe anyway, so they were probably compromised and were among the dead.
Yeah. And eventually what people could not come to Park City unless they had some kind of certificate saying that they were flu free.
Yeah. If they had a medical certificate, and I'm not sure what that involved, but I presume it meant going to a doctor and being cleared, they could not come into Park City. Businesses were closed. Schools were closed. Public gatherings were closed. I found one funny reference to the fact that some of the pool halls and soft drink parlors remained open. Soft drink was what bars turned to when Prohibition, which started earlier in Utah than the nation, when a lot of bars converted to soft drink parlors, and they remained open while everything else was closed. So somebody ratted them out to the state health director, and he made sure he ordered the pool halls and soft drink parlors closed as well.
Yeah. Well, there was something that you wrote about, plenty of controversy, you said, but can you tell us about any in particular as a result?
Well, for one, there was a disagreement among doctors if the town should be closed up that much, but the mayor wisely erred on the side of caution and did close the city up. Another controversy was the quarantining. When someone had a flu patient in their home, that home was quarantined with a sign posted that no one should come in or out. And one of the gossip columns, the Park Float was the name of the column, it said people are treating the quarantine as a joke, and it pretty much is a joke without further elaboration. So apparently that rule was frequently violated.
Yeah. Okay, and that was the picture I think that they used in the paper was the kind of the pool hall.
The pool hall.
Yeah.
Indeed, soft drink parlors, quote unquote.
Well, it sounds like you've done enough research that you read another column or two in the works, or no? Was that just a?
Well, I wrote one in today's paper actually on Dr. LeCompte, who was a character. He was involved in the flu epidemic, advocated closing town down pretty tight. He rode with Custer's cavalry. Fortunately, he wasn't with them the day of the Little Bighorn, but he was one of Park City's great pioneer doctors. And there's an article about him in today's paper.
Okay. Well, I'll look forward to seeing that. Anything else you think is noteworthy? I mean, it kind of did its business and then kind of left by the end of the year of 19.
Well, here's one thing that to bear in mind. 100 years ago, they pretty much reopened Park City in the first of the year on December 1st. Schools opened January 1st, and schools opened December 30th. But there were 22 new cases that bounced back in January, forcing a second shutdown. Those cases ran their course in a couple of weeks, and the town reopened quickly. But there was a bounce back after everybody thought all was well.
Which is what we were just talking to Health Director Rich Bulla about, that you just don't want to reopen too soon.
Exactly.
Larry, hey, I appreciate the work you've done and the time you spent with us this morning. Thanks.
You're welcome. Anytime.
And that's author and historian Larry Warren. KPCW News Time now, 8:58. Up to 37 degrees here in Old Town Park City. Looking for a fabulous day. Sunshine, a high near 60. 90. Partly cloudy tonight with a low of 34. We've got mostly cloudy skies for Thursday. Looking for a high of about 56 with rain turning to snow coming Thursday night. Looks like we've got mostly sunny skies, though, happening on Friday now with a high of 53. And then another round of some rain showers turning to snow for Saturday night into Sunday. Sunday's expected high at this point, 38, so that's just darn right cold. Well, Park City Films is presenting some virtual screenings, and this is one that you may be interested in. I watched it the other night. It was fabulous. It's Once We're Brothers. It's Robbie Robertson and the band, described as a confessional, cautionary, and occasionally humorous trail of Robbie Robertson's young life and the creation of the band, one of the most enduring groups in the history of popular music. Screenings are available through Friday at 5:30 p.m. It blends rare footage, photography, songs, and interviews with many of the collaborators, including Bruce Springsteen, Eric Clapton, Van Morrison, Bob Dylan. Again, for the screening, Park City Film will receive 50% of the price. You can get details on how to view and rent the film at parkcityfilm.org. They also have another film, And Then We Were Dance and Fabulous Fungi. And if you or someone you know is in an abusive relationship or feeling unsafe, please contact 24/7 Helpline at 1-800-647-9161 and speak with an advocate. Peace House has suspended receiving in-kind donations, support groups, and parenting classes. But happy to talk to you. For more information about their activities, you can call 435-658-4739 during business hours. Coming up now at 9 o'clock, stay tuned for headline news from National Public Radio, followed by The Mountain Life. This is KPCW Park City. It's 9 o'clock.